It is almost 3 a.m., and you know what that means. Witches, goblins, and ghouls are about to be at their most powerful, and supernatural activity is about to reach its climax, if you will.
So pull out your harnesses and strap on your broomsticks, because it's time for
the bitching hour.
Hi.
Hi, honey.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mia. When I was 8, my best friend had her birthday party on my birthday. After she blew out the candles, I made her mom relight them and made everyone sing happy birthday to me. My moon is in Gemini.
Oh, my God. Wait, was her actual day of birth your birthday?
No, she just had her party on my birthday.
What a bitch.
It was Elise.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Elise. Oh, well, that's different. You guys were best friends.
No, it was not a good thing.
Oh.
It was very uncomfortable. There's a video of it, and everyone's like... it literally cuts from, happy birthday, Elise! And then, her mom, begrudgingly relighting the candles, and I'm like, come on, sing!
Oh, my God.
It's not great, yeah. Gemini action.
I might have done the same thing, though. I feel like... You know what I mean? Celebrate my day.
It's my day.
Are you a birthday month person?
No, but I probably was as a kid.
I am embarrassed, but I think I might be.
I think I'm a birthday week.
I'm a birthday year kind of person.
Yeah, I was born at some point.
Okay. Hey everyone, I'm Maggie, and when I was little, my brother and my cousins and I would play Don't Touch the Floor Hot Lava Sprinting Game across the front hall of my tutu's house and slam ourselves as hard as we possibly could into the runner that was hanging up on the wall.
Just brain damage.
Splat. Actually, I don't think this was a spoken rule, but I think it was also who could continue to keep doing it before right, one longest. Of the parents would walk in and go, guys, what the fuck?
Yeah,
what are you doing?
Oh my God. Just pushing boundaries as much as you can.
I love it. Yeah. Also, we would run from runner. My grandmother had all these runners on the floor and then the one hanging on the wall. Yeah. And so we would jump from runner to runner and they would slide as you'd go. So you're
doing the Scooby-Doo thing.
Yes.
Running in place.
Wow. Amazing. I feel like those are both little intros that really demonstrated who we are as children.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
Okay, so in this episode, we're going to get started with another game of Would You Rather. Surprise, surprise, Mia roasted my ass again.
Whoops.
Our main brew this week is about chosen family. We're talking about friends, blood family, queerness, glitter, food, and all of our feelings. Finally, we're going to close it out with a super yummy discussion about food.
Let's do it.
Okay.
So today we are going to play a little game of Would You Rather. This turned out to be a fan favorite, so we thought we'd bring it back and torture each other some more.
Great. Can I start?
Please.
All right. Just started out uncomfortable. Would you rather constantly feel like you have sand in your underwear or feel like you have a moderate-sized pebble in your shoe at all times?
Moderate-sized pebble.
Really?
Yeah, sometimes I'll have something in my shoe and I just won't even bother taking it out. I'll just walk around all day like that.
That is weird.
Yeah.
That is really strange.
The most private thing I'm willing to admit.
That is really weird.
Also, maybe I like sand in my pants. I'm down for both, honestly. Please.
That sounds so unpleasant. I'm kidding.
Okay, Maggie, would you rather hang out with Kalani or Hayley Kiyoko? You have to choose.
I feel like both of them are really cool, and I would, A, not really know what to say, and B, I feel like we probably have different interests because they're fashionable and do music, and I watch TV, so I think...
You'd rather let them hang out?
I'd rather let the two of them hang out, in a music video kind of setting, but I'd rather hang out with Hayley Kiyoko, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think me too.
Yeah. Okay, Mia.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather never be able to eat vegan nuggets again or never be able to eat Crunchwrap Supreme sub beans for beef at Taco Bell ever again?
Wow. I'd rather never be able to eat vegan nuggets.
Really?
Yeah. Taco Bell is very important to me.
I mean, yeah.
It's crucial.
How do you answer so fast? It's like, I
just get a feeling.
I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. Taco Bell is everything. Here's the thing about vegan nuggets. You could just get a vegan chicken patty.
Okay.
There's a loophole.
That is not... What?
Okay, or, like, I'd be satisfied with a lot of other kinds of fake meat.
Yeah.
Like burgers. Or, seitan. Yeah, or tofu or tempeh. So, honestly, come for me.
Okay.
You ready for your next one?
Yes, I am.
All right, Maggie. Would you rather never be able to eat mayonnaise again, or you have to eat a full jar a day with a spoon on a hot summer day at the beach?
Oh, I just wouldn't eat mayonnaise again, which is a big deal for me. I mean, I really, if it doesn't have a good mayonnaise content, I normally won't eat it.
Yeah.
But because I also feel like there are no real true substitutes for mayonnaise. There are things that can kind of get me by.
Right.
That I would live.
Like a honey mustard.
Like a honey mustard, like ranch.
Oh, ranch. Blue cheese.
Blue cheese. None of it is quite as good, but I would find a way to live through it. Just cheese in general.
Yeah,
I feel like just put some cheese curds in it and I'll just close my eyes and pretend.
Okay.
Mia, would you rather have to live in the woods alone with no human contact for 5 years? Like completely on your own, foraging, everything. Or you have to share a twin bed with a platonic friend for the rest of your life. Like there is...
Oh my God.
What? Did I actually give you a hard one?
Yeah. That is really hard. Can I have a dog in the woods?
No. You are alone.
Damn it. I think I'd share a bed with a platonic friend for the rest of my life.
Sweaty is what that sounds like to me.
Sweaty. But I want to push back against the idea that friendships can't have, like, vulnerability and intimacy in them.
Noble as that is, that just sounds really sweaty.
I think I would lose my shit alone in the woods. I'm a scaredy cat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bad at things. And I'm a dogger. So
yeah. I would go, like, I would really have a hard time mentally.
I would really probably not make it very long.
Yeah, me too.
I would be like, no, get me off the island.
Yeah.
Yep. Could I do the podcast from there, though?
Yeah, just phone
in. Okay, yeah.
That's you just have to phone in.
This one's going to be really hard for Maggie. So Maggie and Nancy both really like a clean space and a clean smelling space.
True.
So my would you rather for you to wrap things up is, would you rather live in a public restroom that smells like Anthropology or an Anthropology store that smells like a public restroom?
Oh, you bitch.
I thought it was a good one.
That is a really good one. Fuck. That's so, like, really hard.
In either scenario, you have the amenities. In the public restroom, you have like a stove and a kitchen. And
do
like,
I have a bed in the public?
Yeah.
Oh, then I choose the public restroom.
But it smells like a public restroom. People come in and use it.
But you said it smelled like an Anthropology.
Oh, wait. It smells like an Anthropology. You're right. I'm confused. It smells like an Anthropology.
So you're saying that I could just have like a normal setup in a public bathroom and it smells like an Anthropology. Shit. I just have to deal with people walking in and out.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
But in an Anthropology, I have to deal with people walking in and out. And it smells like a public bathroom.
Right.
Yeah, no, I definitely choose a public bathroom. Wow. See, I don't really care about... I care about cleanliness. Like, don't sit your street clothes on my pillow, etc. Don't put your shoes on my bed. That's what my mom always said.
I wear all of my clothes as outerwear.
Oh, my God.
I don't have any clothes that I don't wear out in public. Like, I maybe, like, a couple pairs of, like, boxer shorts. Because, like, you know, why would I wear those out? But, like, I'm wearing sweatpants right now. I'm going to go home and sleep in this.
I'll go out in sweatpants. But I have a whole set. See, like, I have sweatpants that I only wear in the house. And then I have sweatpants that I wear out of the house. Okay, one more for you. Mia, would you rather never be able to see a live drag show again?
Wow.
Or never be able to wear wedge heels to the club again?
God damn it.
That's right.
Wedge heels. See ya.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Drag's more important. I'll wear flats to the club. I wear sneakers a lot.
It's nice.
So.
Sneakers are good for the club. Also, you know, wedge heels can be good, but they can also hurt your tootsies.
Right. So, Maggie, do you want to introduce this week's brew?
Sure, sure. So the topic for this week's main brew is chosen family, which I think we're both really excited about.
So
there are a couple different things we want to talk about that go into chosen families, how we define them, how we feel like we have them or don't have them now, who's in them, and how queerness interacts with that. Do you want to get started by maybe talking just like off the top of your head, like what is your definition of chosen family? Like how are you defining it right now?
Okay. I would love to. Okay. So some thoughts that I had been thinking about today was about, I started thinking about how I define chosen family and I realized it's a, to me, it's about choosing rather than defining it, which I guess makes sense. It's chosen family, right? But I was thinking about like, who do we choose and who chooses us back? And I was thinking about how something that's important to me the older that I get is actively pursuing relationships where that desire for intimacy and nurturing is like reciprocated. And so I have like less energy for relationships, I feel like, the older that I get. You know, I don't have as much social energy. And I feel like it's more important for me nowadays in my relationships to feel chosen and to not feel like a burden to people or to not feel like my needs or my expectations or my love for them is too much in some way. And so I think that for me, I think there's kind of a calibration of of like meeting each other's needs in a way where you just like know you can rely on these people to kind of give you that same expectation and that same tenderness and that same, you know, like I like to be needed by the people in my life.
Yes.
And so having that kind of relationship where someone can be vulnerable enough with me to say, I need this thing from you is something that really defines chosen family for me. I'm getting real sentimental right off the bat. Here we go.
But it's true.
Right off the bat.
I really agree with that because when I was thinking about how I define chosen family or like what that word means to me, I think about the fact that with family, like culturally, we have this idea that families are going to be very loyal to you. And part of that loyalty is being able to really listen to what you need and in some cases give it if you're able to, and in other cases like be honest about the fact that you can't. Like it doesn't mean just like a, you know, like you're not, I don't like the term obligation quite the same way. I think that's something about chosen family that's important to me, is that they're, the obligation isn't the same, like I'm choosing to do this, like the like emotional love and labor that I'm giving and taking in a chosen family is purposeful. It doesn't feel like it is like, you know, I think sometimes we use the term emotional labor in a bad way, which is sometimes it can be wielded against you, but it also can be like a labor of love.
Right. And it means so much to kind of do that labor. I think I'd like to mention the quote that I originally posted to get us started talking about this.
Yes.
So this is a quote by S. Bear Bergman from his collection of essays called Blood, Marriage, Wine, and Glitter, which are the four types of families. And so, you know, blood is your family of origin, marriage is your romantic pursuits and relationships and loved ones and significant others in that way. He grew up Jewish, and so for him, wine was about kind of like the family that you build community with in that way, and spirituality and sharing, you know, nourishment. And then glitter, and I say this because this one's my favorite. I just wanted to get to the glitter one. Glitter because he talks a lot about like growing up and a lot of his chosen family and immediate introduction to queer communities was like drag and drag communities. And he talks about how that's his glitter family because it's cheap, easy to find, and impossible to get rid of, which is just really sweet. But that's not even the quote. The actual quote.
Yes.
In his book, he writes, I live in a constellation of intimates, and the shape of us is a family. We touch base and check in with each other, and also, I am so gratified to report, they sometimes check in with one another. Correspondences have sprung up and friendships have started to form beyond my influence. Family has begun to take on a transitive property as well. And this reminds me of what you're saying about, it's about checking in. It's about, it's not a duty. It's not an obligation or a task. It's about wanting to see if, like, what's going on with each other and wanting to provide something and receive something. And it's all about reciprocity.
And doing things like, I don't know, I think it's so, when I think of chosen families, like, there are so many different ways that that plays out. And so, like, Nancy and I have been together for a while, and I consider us to have a lot of overlapping, like, really close family members. Like, a lot of the times, like, we kind of are a couple in the chosen family that we're in. But I also think that, like, there are a lot of chosen families where, like, there are multiple romantic relationships or, like, polyamorous relationships. And there are also, like, kind of chosen families are queer in and of themselves. Like, that, like, really, really intimate kind of friendship, like, is it platonic, is it not, like, that that liminal space, like, how are we gonna say that that's not queer?
It's,
like,
it's modeled out of queerness. Yeah, totally. So Maggie, that brings me to an important question. Is there for you a distinction between queer and non-queer chosen family? Do you feel like you have non-queer members of your chosen family? I mean, because we talk about, you know, we both kind of have quickly just grazed over the fact that we see chosen family as inherently a queer thing, which I want to talk more about that as well. But I want to hear about whether there's a distinction for you.
I think that there is, but I think it's nuanced. So I'm not going to be something that, like, makes up my support network is not, it's going to be queer. Because I need that. And, like, I'm sure there are people who can't do that or, like, can do without that, but I can't, you know? And so the majority of the people I'm around are going to be queer, but also for the non-queer people that I choose to, like, get that close with, it's, like, they're going to be operating within a framework of queerness. They're going to be, like, there's going to be queer people all around them. They're probably going to be one of the few not queer people. And, like, I was thinking about what that looks like, and weirdly enough, it's like, it's often people who aren't particularly vocal about the fact that they're, like, a queer ally or, like, or a straight ally to queer people, or, you know, it's not, and it's not that they don't talk about it, it's not that they don't care, but there's, like, a kind of, like, you know, like, for whatever reason, like, they as non-queer people have chosen to, like, make family with people who are queer, which, like, for me is, like, that's great. Like, we don't, and I don't, you know, I think, but there are people I go to talk about with things anyways. Like, I don't, I wouldn't always go to a not queer person to talk about, like, deep queer shit that's happening. But, like, I also am not going to go to certain people to talk about shit that is not relevant to them. You know, like, it's, so I don't see it, but yeah, I would say majority queer people. What about you?
I'm finding that that's really important to me. It wasn't something that I had really considered, and I think part of that was because as I kind of grew roots in my queer identity, I was just by, you know, proximity, surrounded by queerness from attending Mount Holyoke and growing up in Western Mass, and, you know, weirdly enough, nearly every one of my friends from high school is queer. And so I think I kind of was fortunate in this way to not have to think about that as much. But as I've gotten older, I've realized that that is kind of really important to me. But I also think, and, you know, I think I spoke about this on the bisexuality episode with Elise about some of the most insidious homophobia that I experience is within queer communities or queer spaces. And so, I want to keep this soft and tender, but I do feel like there is sometimes even a distinction for me in queer people that I'm friends with, of who in that, who that I'm friends with and who that I, is, like, chosen family and really, like, a phrase that kept coming up for me when I was thinking about this episode was my people. And, you know, we all love the Meredith Grey, Christina Yang, you're my person. But thinking of my people and kind of, like, my like hub of people, you know, and I, my mom has said it to me before, you know, when I've been feeling kind of isolated from different groups, and she's just said, like, that's just not your people. That's just a phrase that really feels like it kind of solidifies what that means to me and, like, that connection. And so, you know, it's like with blood family, like some members make you feel more welcome than others, and some relationships are closer and things are dynamic and things move around a bit. But I have relationships with non-queer people that are more nurturing and, you know, based in mutual respect than friendships that I have with some queer people that are just more kind of surface level, or, yeah, we have these identities in common, but the lives that we experience and what we look for in intimate friendships and relationships is sometimes just not a match to be that kind of family.
Well, I think it's really simplistic to put a single blanket over people of, like, XYZ identity or the, like, that's just not
right.
A great way to be going about
because making that's never friendships. Gonna, yeah, and something else that I was thinking about is there is something that could be lost if we try to base who we invite into our lives on identifiers alone. And while, you know, it is really, really important to me to seek out queer spaces and queer communities, and that much of my family is made up of queer people, because there's just a certain level of relating that I need, like you said, like I just need that. But it's kind of nice to see the versatility in what can take shape. And
Well, that actually brings up a good question. Like, I was thinking as I was kind of gathering my thoughts about this topic, I was considering time frame and how long you know someone and in what context you know someone in terms of what defines, I mean, family's kind of a big word. So, like, I was thinking about being only a few years out of college. Like, I feel like growing up, I had so many people that I was very, very close to, but, like, the only people who I would look back on and think of as, like, family are, like, alternative parental figures, you know? So, like, I had my parents, but then I had these, like, coaches and teachers and people that, like, I needed something from that I was able to have that. But I think it, like, it's taken me until, like, really recently to be able to say, like, no, I can, like, really say, like, this is a person I'd consider part of, like, a chosen family. Because, like, having the, like, I didn't realize, or at least for this stage in my life, I'm just now, like, getting into a point of, like, I'm seeing what the next few years are going to look like. I'm seeing what I need. I'm, like, living, I'm not living near biological family, you know? Like, there isn't the same tie to it as when you're, you know, 15 and 16 and 17, you know?
Yeah.
So what about, I mean, what about you? What do you think about timing and context?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I'm sure we'll talk about our blood afterwards, but I'm, you know, I'll just say now that I am the youngest of five and the only girl, and, you know, really feel a special bond with my mom and feel really close to her. But, you know, I grew up, my best friend Sam lived down the street three houses away, and we you know, like, we would go out and people would think that we were sisters, and we loved that. And, you know, there was something to me really powerful about that sisterhood that I shared with her. And, you know, we have been friends since we were nine, and Elise and I have been friends since we were, like, five. And there's something about, to me, that is really interesting about the ways that those relationships have changed and grown through the years. And I think the better that we've gotten at asking for what we need and being direct. And I think that there's, in both those relationships, there's a lot less conflict than there is in relationships I've had with people that started in high school or college. I think because there's almost this familial aspect to it of, we're just going to do the work. You know, there is this kind of, I don't know, it's almost like an obligation or like a commitment, because they just know me so well. And I think that growing up with such strong female relationships was really important to me in a way that I am kind of only now realizing.
You just talked about these friends that you've had since you were really little. And I am one of those people who, I don't have anybody like that. I moved a lot when I was little. And I moved when I was 11, actually, which is, like, the age when, like, yikes, real nightmare. But I don't have friends like that. And so I think hearing, like, how people come to that level of closeness and, like, again, not obligation, but, like, a softer version of obligation, like, like hearing like when it comes from pure numbers of how long you've known someone versus like some thing that you share or like some reason why you're that.
I mean, Maggie, let's talk about us.
I actually picked this topic because I wanted to ask for your hand in marriage.
Yes. I've been waiting. No, but I mean, I feel that way about you. I mean, for the viewers, so Maggie and I met first year at some point.
We made out.
Oh, we did.
We totally made out.
Oh, yeah. That was second semester, first year. Did we meet at all first semester?
Probably once or twice. So, yeah.
As you guys know, everyone I've kissed is my ex, so it's kind of weird having a podcast with my ex, but... You know, there's very few who aren't in the world, so I had to choose one of them. So, yeah, so we met, and we had mutual friends, and we had fun hanging out. But I think what really happened was we lived next door to each other, and a lot of people were gone. You know, I started to really feel like I could share shit with you on a deeper level.
That's actually exactly what I wanted to talk about. And I was thinking about it earlier when you were saying there isn't like any one identity that like pulls me into being friends with someone. And one of the things that I have found about myself relatively recently is that everybody's got shit, right? Like everybody's got their shit. Everybody's seen some shit. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their own history. But like, I really do have a preference for being around people who have made mistakes, mm-hmm. you know, like who have like,
and I'm or a fuck up.
This is just to out.
Yeah. This is just Mia sucks. A call out. I'm a bitch.
No, I just like, I had a period of my life where like I was doing things then that I was really ashamed of. I just wasn't treating myself well. And like now I can look back on myself. Like it takes work for me to look back and be like, okay, but like I still love who that was. Like mm-hmm. I still love her, even though boy, was she having a hard time.
She was up to semantics.
But like I like to be around people who have that for whatever that mm-hmm. is for them. And I don't think it's not that all people don't have something, but I think that's a particular thing. Like there's something to me that is so beautiful to like sit around and talk about things that are actually horrible, but like all be laughing about it. Like sitting around, particularly women, like sitting around a big group of women and being like, oh yeah, like we've all had horrible sexual experiences and rape culture is a nightmare. Like, oh my God. Like,
truly. Yeah. I mean, I think part of what you're speaking to is authenticity. And, you know, Elise and I watched Bridesmaids the other night, mm-hmm. which is an interesting film. But Elise made a joke about me being like Kristen Wiig at one point just because she was being a disaster. And I always joke about just like being a total nightmare. And but at one point her best friend is like, you know, why do you keep hanging out with this guy? Why do you keep spending time with this guy? It's almost like you like spending time with him because he makes you feel bad. And I was like, wow, that's like a call out to Mia from like 2010 to 2016. Like that, I was like, Elise, I don't know if I can, this just got too real. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something really important to me about, and it's not even cathartic. It's mm-hmm. just about authenticity. It's about bringing your whole self and not censoring some part of yourself. And I feel like sometimes, you know, sometimes there's this level of wanting to perform in queer spaces. I mean, I've mentioned it before and we're going to have an episode eventually mm-hmm. about it, but you know, gold stars,
yes,
you know, like wanting to perform queerness, wanting to be queer enough, wanting to, which by the way, no one actually is looking at you, no one cares, but you know, there's something really special to me about the friendships in which I can be like, oh yeah, I fuck up all the time mm-hmm. still, but I think that relationships where I can present that mm-hmm. are really empowering to me.
And for me, where it does, I wouldn't say that it explicitly takes a turn into identity, but it does Venn diagram with identity in a really big way.
Ooh.
And they like,
yes, use it as a verb.
Yes. They're not quite just overlapped circles, but they're like two circles right on top of each other, but they're like pretty close in that, like, for me, I do have friends who have not like had periods of their life when they were partying a lot or were doing things that were kind of unsafe. Mm-hmm. And I respect that people have not made those choices, but I really do need friends who have done that because I need mm-hmm. friends who are not going to be alarmed and like where their reaction is not like, oh, thank God you're not doing that because it scares me. But it's like, thank God you're not doing that because like you're at a point, like you're, this right. is part of your evolving.
Right.
And so I find personally that like, oftentimes that has to be women and very mm-hmm. much has to be queer women. Mm-hmm. Like I need other people where like the overlap, it's again, it's, there are people in other parts of the Venn diagram, but that overlap is big of like mm-hmm. people who are really going to get what that looks like and are going to have, you know.
And it's a sensitivity, but it's an understanding, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not a thing. It's people who are not going to make those moments and memories you share into a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about people who just take what you're giving them and understand you better for it.
Mm-hmm. And come back with their own shit. Like,
yes.
Bring it back. Play it right yeah. back at me.
So we're talking about understanding and we're talking about being able to talk about things. Maggie, I want to know some other ways that chosen family and the support that they provide you take shape for you. What does it look like?
I think for me, the way that chosen family kind of takes shape and like is a verb as opposed to just like a noun is really through, I mean, it's so for me, I think it's actually through love languages. Like I hate to go there, but I'm going to go there.
Take us there.
So there's a quiz online you can take about it, but there are 6 different love languages. And the theory is that like, you kind of give and take and communicate better with certain love languages than others. And for me, I know that verbal communication is really, really high on my list of mm-hmm. like things that I need and that I like to give. And spending quality time together that like is relatively aimless is...
That's my biggest
one. It is like my biggest one. And so for me...
Here we are. Sitting in front of microphones in your living room.
But it's true. Like that is when I think of like queer family, I think of like experiences, like sitting around talking about shit. I think mm-hmm. of experience, like, you know, that's what I flash to mm-hmm. because those are the times, you know, I have friends, obviously you're one of them, that like I will call when there's a crisis mm-hmm. and like can really provide stuff in the moment. And like, I'm ready to react if they're in crisis. But sometimes like the most benefit or like the most kind of reward of emotional labor I get from friends is just listening to them talk about themselves. Mm-hmm. Like it is so helpful for me to like watch friends work through shit.
Mm-hmm. And I could do that all night long. Yeah. No, totally.
What about you? Like, what is it? What I know you obviously just said quality time.
Well, yes, I love quality time. But you know, there's kind of an unanticipated need that's developed for me. I mean, many needs. So the program that I'm in is an accelerated BSN. It's 16 months long, which is just absurd, truly. And I think I was thinking about this question and, you know, this was something that really, really overwhelmed me last semester. Last semester was the hardest thing that I've ever done. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like learning a full new language. All this terminology is being thrown at you. Constantly learning new physical, technical skills. And here's the thing. I could do a whole stand-up bit on this. I need responses from the queer nurses out there. How the fuck do you open, like, pill packets with no nails? I am struggling. Like, in front of my instructors, they're like, just open it. And I'm like, I don't have nails. I can't get, I'm like, can I bite it? They're like, no, Mia. So anyways, learning a lot of new technical skills and just like the terrifying nature of starting anything new and mm-hmm. moving. And, you know, it was really, really overwhelming. And I was fortunate to move to Boston where a lot of my people already were. The community that I've worked towards with my people since moving here. I mean, you and Nancy have literally fed me countless times, like tonight.
I love doing it though. It's
like... I mean, I would be texting Maggie, I remember last semester, like trying to you know, use the laundromat's Wi-Fi to take a quiz online. And and Nancy just texts me and is like, hey, come upstairs. We made fajitas.
We live above a laundromat.
It's amazing. And you know, it's the silliest little things. It's like, oh, I fucking forgot the laundry detergent and I have to walk all the way back to my apartment to get it. And I just text you guys and you're like, no, we have some. Just come upstairs. We'll bring it down to you. Or, mm-hmm. you know, there's like so much. And it. I guess I'm making it sound like you guys are my mothers. Are you my mother?
Are you my mother?
Shut up. And it's like an overwhelming sense of support. And, you know, we talk about how important it is for us to see aging queers mm-hmm. and, you know, older adults who do things or have kids or don't have kids and get married or don't get married. And, you know, to see like dynamic portraits of older queers so you can say like, oh, I can live whatever kind of life that I want to live. Like right. it's possible for me to like grow up mm-hmm. and be a person and age.
Right. Like there's an example of adulthood. Maybe there's even two examples of what right. adulthood
and maybe they're like. Together.
Maybe it's Cameron and Rhea.
Hello. But honestly, like being in your home and seeing, you know, you guys have kind of been that kind of example for me to be like, wow, like I would love to build a home with someone. I would love to have a routine with somebody.
I think about that. That really brings us back to the word chosen, is that like when I'm choosing people to make community with, I want to choose people where there is a kind of like it's like a byproduct of role models, or I mean, I don't know exactly how you'd say like a horizontal role model, like somebody who's mm-hmm. your age and at the same point as you, but like you like
I think goals.
That, yes. And like energy catching, you know, mm-hmm. like I think about, wow. I like started working in healthcare and I looked at me and I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I can go to occupational therapy school.
Hell yeah.
I'm just going to take, like, Mia did it. Like, Mia took the prereqs. I'm going to take the prereqs. I can do it. Like, that kind of energy building is like, amazing. That's the point to me of chosen family. Because right. like, because you picked people that you wanted to get that energy from. Like,
right.
You're not picking people where you don't want their energy.
Right. Like, right. And yeah. And people who, you know, see you wanting to do something and say, of course you can do it. There's mm-hmm. not even a question in my mind of whether you can do that, mm-hmm. you know? And
I'm curious, like, to kind of go into biological family a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So how does your biological family play into all of this?
Well, I think, so my biological family, well, biological is an interesting
yeah.
word in the case of my family. And my family is a pretty nicely complicated example to talk about. So basically, so I'm the youngest of three. My parents got divorced when I was a very small child, like basically before I was born. So my oldest brother played soccer growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we all did because we grew up in New England. I feel like in New England, you just like send your kids into soccer. Like that's just like it. Every kid grows up in New England, like with a mullet playing soccer.
Oh God.
In the 90s. So my oldest brother, Alex, played soccer and he played for like a kind of like a travel team. And he had a best friend on the team and his best friend had a single dad. And my mom and Danny, my now stepbrother, his dad and my mom started dating and they dated from the time I was like 6 until I was like 13. And Danny has a brother as well. So two stepbrothers, two biological brothers,
mm-hmm.
5 of us in total. My parents got married when I was 13, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been, you know, 10 plus years now and they dated for a really long time before that. And so I really grew up with my stepbrothers as my brothers.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember being like 8 and being like, I don't want to call them my mom's boyfriend's kids. They're my brothers.
Right.
You know, and it's not even stepbrothers. Like, yeah, sure, technically they're my stepbrothers, but mm-hmm. they're very much my brothers. And we all were very close growing up.
I cannot believe that you guys called your brother Blumpkin for so long and your mom didn't know what it meant. Like, that is still yeah. the craziest fucking story. I can't.
We told her over Thanksgiving dinner. She did not love it. Some of the shit that we did, too. Like, we had pet scorpions.
Oh, yeah. You talked about them on the...
Oh, yeah.
Previously, yeah.
Yeah. Like, there was a tarantula at one point. We used to just, like... We busted holes in the walls and would just cover them up with the same Fight Club poster every time.
Fuck, I can't.
And then as soon as she fixed it, another friend, like, punched a hole through the wall.
I'm never having kids.
Yeah, we were mad. We were really just like, it was, but it was a blast. And we were all friends. And so the aspect of chosen family, like my mom chose my stepdad. It was my brother's best friend. There's something about, you know, friendship becoming family that kind of set up a really beautiful model for me of choosing family.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's it's really kind of nice. And as far as, you know, like we had talked about this too, that it's, you know, it's, I think it's important for us to consider in making a queer podcast that we're very fortunate to have the kinds of families that we have.
Right.
And that the experiences of a lot of queer people are not like this. And that's not to say that my family is not dysfunctional, because that's a farce. You know, like that, like shit happens in every family.
Right.
Everyone has their shit. But there, you know, there's a lot of love in my family, and I think I'm really fortunate to have a blood family that automatically kind of incorporated chosen family ideals.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, on that note about like being fortunate to have supportive families in and around queer identities, like so much of chosen family and queer family and what that means comes from like kids
needing
support and like making support for themselves, like as like their families abandon them.
Right.
And so like, I don't ever want to kind of co-opt the term chosen family in that way, or to imply that like, to kind of mask how lucky it is and like how, and give respect to like my blood family about like who they are and like our relationships. Like, it's not like our relationships are not just about me being queer, you know, which is like really important too. But I think one of the really cool things that actually my mom taught me about is the idea that like somebody can love you as much as they are possibly capable of loving you, and you can still not get things that you need from them.
Right.
And like, I think in terms of things you need from them, that really plays into being a child and like your own blood family, but like those things can be held at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. That's what I think about when I think about chosen family, is kind of like having a give and take that like really does fill need, you know, like for you and for other people. And so,
and it's, I think, important for us to not detract from what it means to have to choose new family.
Right. You know, I was thinking about the other day, like, I was talking to my mom about how I would respond if, like, a nephew or niece or, like, younger cousin or whatever came out to me. Like, how would you respond to, like, a child or, like, even just someone you know, like, someone, a friend's kid coming out to you? And I was, and I think at this point, my reaction would be to, like, celebrate it. Because there's no one else in your life who celebrates you coming out than other queer people. Like, people don't do that. Like, they add, like,
even, they tolerate you.
Right. And it's so loving. Like, they're so, like, you have to give credit to, like, straight people who are like, oh, we love you. We love you no matter what. This is great.
But acceptance still insinuates that there's something othered.
And it's not even their fault. You know, it's like, it's just the society that we're living in. Like, this is.
And their experience. I mean, you can't claim to understand or to be able to provide things that people need when you just don't share that same, like, doorway into life.
Right.
Not to bring up some closet imagery. It's a room, not a closet.
I really do think that it's true that there's a celebration that's needed, like, as you, it's just that necessity is a really different thing for different people, depending on, like how their family reacts to them and how they're treated. But
yeah, and it's often a way that,
yeah,
you know, even though my family didn't turn me away, even though my family says like, oh, we love you, we support you, whatever, blah blah blah, like there's always going to be that feeling of coming home,
yeah,
that's just part of queer chosen family. So something that I know about myself to be true is that I feel the most like myself when I'm taking care of people, physically treating people's needs is empowering and makes me feel like myself. But being there for people and talking with people is also really special to me. And so I think that my kind of closing thoughts about chosen family is just thinking about the ways that we take care of each other and the way that that kind of gives us energy.
Mm-hmm.
And just wanting to actively pursue that and to kind of pursue those kinds of relationships and to be honest with myself when I'm not experiencing that in relationships and to say like, okay, I'm going to redirect my energy.
Yeah. I will say also to close out that candidly, conversations about chosen family that I have listened to or that I have even been in sometimes will make me kind of anxious because mm-hmm. this is a really, I mean, for us, given our age, and I'm assuming at least some of the people listening, it's a serious transition time.
Mm-hmm.
Like moving out in general, like if you're going to college or like further on in school, like that's a huge change.
Mm-hmm.
Move, like leaving or graduating or getting a first job is a huge deal. And I remember thinking like, it just made me anxious. I didn't know where people were gonna be. I was nervous to put down roots with people. I was nervous once I did that they were gonna leave. I would mm-hmm. get nervous if, you know, sometimes the people you meet like early on in school or early on in a job or in a new city aren't a great fit for you. And right. like that panic feeling of being like, oh shit, like this is, we're really not going to be that good of friends. And mm-hmm. like, oh my God, you know, that's a hard thing to deal with. And so one of the things that I think is the nicest about chosen family is that like you have forever to continue to meet people and get close to them and like,
mm-hmm.
and figure out what you want from it. Like, that is the thing I think that is the nicest.
Ah.
Fam.
Amazing.
This was nice.
This was very nice.
Ooh.
So, to close out this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about some munchies that we enjoy.
Yes.
So, the question I want to propose to Maggie is this. Maggie, what is the grossest snack that you eat? And love.
Okay. None of these things are gross in and of themselves. Like, I eat a lot of gross shit,
mm-hmm.
for sure. Like, I eat a lot
just debris.
Just trash.
No, dirty like, diapers.
Taco Bell, you know, like, stuff like that. Whatever. But I used to do this a lot when my brother and I were living together one summer in Philadelphia. I would get a spoonful of peanut butter and a spoonful of cream cheese and a slice of like deli meat turkey. And I would hold the turkey in one hand and the two spoons in the other hand. And I would take, okay, it has to be in this order. You take a lick of the peanut butter, you swallow it, and then you take a lick of the cream cheese, and then you take a bite of the turkey.
Like, holy shit. Oh my God.
It's not cute, but it was satisfying because it's like you got...
A spoonful of cream cheese sounds gross.
Oh, spoonful of cream cheese? I like mayonnaise on my fries. I like mayonnaise on my sandwiches. I make my grilled cheese with mayonnaise. You know that?
Well, I love oil. I don't think I can get behind that one.
Wow. Your loss.
My favorite gross snack...
Yes.
Besides the unbelievable amounts of Taco Bell... That I think about having because now I live in a city with no Taco Bells.
No fucking Taco Bells.
But,
we gotta leave.
Yeah, big mistake moving here. One of my favorite things to eat is a chocolate item with Doritos. So when I was a kid, my brother and I used to love to get Snickers bars and nacho cheese Doritos, and you'd eat them like a bite of each.
Oh, yeah.
But nowadays, after a 2-year stint of veganism, old habits die hard. And I love eating Oreos with the spicy sweet chili Doritos and just washing it down with some Monster.
No. Okay, the grossest thing you've said is Monster. That is like salty sweet. I can fuck with it. Monster.
It just slides down the gullet. And then I'm ready for BMX. I'm ready for anything after that.
I can't. How do you handle the caffeine? Don't you get
today
heart
palpitations? Today I couldn't zip up my fly. In the bathroom. It took me like 5 tries because my hand was shaking. And I was like, wow, I really shouldn't have done that.
Oh my God. Yeah, I can't do any caffeine at all.
No black
or green tea.
There's
like,
only in... So the nice thing... So I drink... just as an advertisement, I drink Monster Rehab, which is tea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not carbonated. So it tastes less like fuel. Mm-hmm. And it actually has like very little sugar in it. It's got like maybe 10 grams of sugar in two servings, a full can. Mm-hmm. And it's got like two plus cups of coffee worth of caffeine in it.
That is my nightmare.
So it's a lot at once, and I have shotgunned them several times.
Oh.
I typically nowadays will drink like half of it in the morning before mm-hmm. I leave. And then when I come home from class or clinical, I'll finish it because sometimes I'll get a headache if I don't.
Oh my God.
I need a vape for caffeine. Do they have those?
Caffeine.
I need to like wean my, yeah, like titrate down.
Oh my God. I told you what my method is because I don't consume any caffeine. I like to just really pump myself up with music. And so this morning I was really tired and I was going to work and I was like, come on, Margaret. And Margaret's what I call myself when I really need to, you know, get tough with myself.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, come on, Margaret. Like, you got to wake up. Like, you haven't even gotten there yet. And so I started playing the Cotton Eye Joe and Cha-Cha Slide on my phone through my earphones, like really loud.
I just love the idea of someone sitting next to you and faintly hearing, did not need, not, not, no.
They probably did. It was like a super
take
crowded
it back
bus.
Now, y'all.
It was like hot in there, and like I was like, one hot this time. It was perfect. I was energized. I felt great.
Wow.
No caffeine hangover. Amazing.
Maybe there's caffeine in the Cotton Eye Joe.
Probably.
They should put like a Surgeon General warning on it.
Ugh, I live for a good line dance.
So next week, we are featuring one of our Women Crush Everydays. It's our second guest episode. Woo. We sat down with our good friend and graduating Mount Holyoke senior, Rochelle, to find out how she's so goddamn good at Twitter. Mm. How do we edit ourselves for the World Wide Web? How do we document our lives for others, for ourselves? Maggie and I finally find out what a Finsta is as we explore self-documentation. So tune in next week for that episode.
Yes, please do. You can find us on iTunes and Google Play, Overcast, and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts.
And follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah.
We like the validation.
Exactly. You want to talk about self-documentation? Follow us everywhere.
Yeah. Document. What?
Carrier pigeon. All right. Well, see you guys next week.
See ya.
Bye.